This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow a standard orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
I say.
You will obey. It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends. Welcome to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show with the original Star Trek series. This is a show where we dive into the characters, concepts, cliches, and other things that don't start with C about the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru, and I'm the TOS editor for the network. And with me today is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars.
Hello.
And today we have Colin from Melodic Treks, formerly of Trek News and Views.
Good evening. Or good afternoon, depending on whatever time of day you're listening to.
It's still, yeah, it's morning for us now while we're recording, but late afternoon for you.
Yes, getting off at dinner time.
What time is it on Vulcan?
Well, this is the thing, because, you know, this is one of the things that we have to rise, because he says every 7 years, but is that a Vulcan year?
That's true. Yeah. I'm sure he means human Earth years.
Yeah. That's his human side talking.
Well, today we asked Colin to join us because we're doing a crossover episode. In case you missed it, on Saturday they released Colin released a Melodic Treks where Mike and I joined him to talk about the Amok Time fight music. So today we thought we'd cross over and do, which is a C, and do our favorite C, which is a commentary. So we've got a crossover commentary, a double C.
All these C's. And you got Colin, which is another C.
Yeah.
Colin crossover commentary.
Three C's.
This is going to be glorious.
It's just a C overload.
So we're going to be watching Amok Time, believe it or not. And we'll be doing commentary on it. We won't just be discussing the music. We'll talk about the whole episode. And we'll start whenever Mike leads us in, because Mike's the expert at such things.
Okay, just to clarify, for those people who, I mean, I'm just kind of used to this being standard operating procedure or whatever, but you don't have to watch with the show. If we're doing our jobs properly, we'll make it so that you understand what we're talking about without watching the episode, even if you're not super familiar with the episode. I mean, I did like 182 commentaries for my other show, and I listened to one with the movie. So just don't feel like you have to do that. I know some people have been complaining or whatever, not complaining, but some people have been disappointed by the commentaries, saying like, hey, I got to go home and watch this, you know, listen to this at home instead of in my car. Just listen to it in your car. It'll be fine. It'll be good. All right? Okay.
I like the way you make it sound like we know what we're doing.
Well, I didn't want to do that. I mean, let's not go overboard here. But, all right. So, you can watch the regular version or the remastered version. If you're watching a DVD from England, that's not going to work. But that's okay, because one of us is anyway. So, all right. So that's how much doesn't matter. All right. Great.
Yeah. And I'm watching the remastered English DVD.
I'm watching the original.
I'm watching Netflix.
Sweet.
There you go.
All right.
All the bases covered.
And you people at home don't have to watch anything.
No. You're all right. In your head.
Yes. Yes.
We will paint a picture with words.
Whoa. Exactly. So if you guys are ready, we will start this up in 3, 2, 1, start.
Here we go.
So here we have the Enterprise flying through space.
See, obviously, this bit of Kirk climbing up the ladder, the turbo lifts are broke.
Yeah, I guess so. No, he was just in that little, there's like a little side area that doesn't have turbolifts.
Ah.
Yeah.
So like,
is that where the Yeomans, is that where the Yeomans are then?
That's where that's where the floor is with the hole that leads to John Malkovich's head is.
Ah. Yeah. Another crossover.
Yep, yep. So this moment here, okay, Nurse Chapel brings the soup into the in this box room. See how I'm narrating?
You are. Yeah. You're doing really well. And Nurse Chapel is wearing a fetching blue today.
Yeah. Her hair is in a lovely updo. No, we won't do that.
There's a shot which is coming up here where she goes into the room. You hear Spock scream, and the soup is flung out the door and onto the wall. Maybe one of the best uses of like an off-screen character, an introduction to a character in a TV show ever.
Oh, gotcha. Doc!
Especially after hearing McCoy say that, you know, if you ask about my personal life again, I'll break your neck.
Mm-hmm.
Little trivia moment, though. The Spock's name on the door is Commander.
Is that his first
Commander?
Name?
Yeah, up until now.
So when he's captain, his name is Captain Commander Spock?
Well, up until now, he's been a lieutenant commander. So this is his...
Oh, promotion for the second season.
Promotion for the second season.
Yeah, this was the first episode of the second season, and it's interesting that they would open up with this. Spoilers for later in the episode, but we think that Kirk dies. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking that that's interesting. Like, I wonder if people viewing this for the first time were worried that they... you know, brought Shatner back for a glorified cameo and then killed him off and made Spock in command. Or
yeah.
Maybe replacing the whole crew, because one of the first things we see after the credits roll here is Chekhov. So it's like we're bringing in new people, you know.
Chekhov
who
the monkey.
Who knows if Spock's going to stay around. And
yeah, I don't know. I wonder if that type of thing really happened back in the day. I have a feeling it was more along the lines of, like, you know, the way that Chekhov is introduced, as if, like, you know,
whatever. Well, I brought Chekhov in because of the monkeys, didn't I?
Yeah.
And put a triple on his head.
Yep. But, like, I think that if Shatner had gone, well, I mean, I think we can see that, you know, I don't think that people really thought about things that way in terms of television back then. You know, like, I mean, one of the things which we learned from Mark Cushman is that, you know, this episode was okay. That's the end of the credits. Thank you. You know, one of the things that we learned from Mark Cushman about this episode is that you know, they didn't know whether or not Spock would be back, and if he hadn't been back, I wonder if they would have even mentioned it, or if they would have just been like, okay, here's another Vulcan. You know,
possibly. Possibly. There is a continuity error with the soup and all. I don't know if you guys know.
What's that?
When it's and the first when he throws it, it hits the wall.
Mm-hmm.
In the second set of shots where Spock's coming out and they pan back around to show McCoy and Kirk standing in the hall. There's no soup on the wall.
Really? Because there is when he opens up the door. Yeah. You can see it on the wall.
But on the
panel, there is for several episodes afterwards.
Yeah, they just obviously changed the panel. And there's also because obviously after this they filmed the Doomsday Machine, and mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. they was already getting the set ready to do the Doomsday Machine. So the door that McCoy comes out of is slightly different to what it is normally is because they've already started altering the set for the Doomsday Machine.
Hmm.
Look at this. Spock has a knife behind his back. Like, you know, I need to go to Vulcan.
And the way that this scene is shot is amazing because it doesn't, it's not like your typical thing, which you would see in most TV shows where they zoom in on the knife or whatever. It's just a regular shot. And then if you look very closely behind his back, he's holding a knife, you know? Yeah.
And his hands are shaking.
Yeah. It's a great, great composition and great.
Does Kirk see it in this, at this point right here?
Right there, I think he does.
There he sees it, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
this whole episode is directed incredibly.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of subtle stuff you get from Shatner and Nimoy in this.
Yeah, both of their performances are great. There you can see the soup. He's got his, room chest.
With the weird lights and.
Well, that's his pinball machine.
Yeah. Well, he shops at Spencer's.
Yeah, whatever that is.
Oh, poor Colin.
Oh, that joke will kill in America.
Okay. Those of us on this side of the Atlantic haven't got a clue what you're talking about. Google it, people.
I read in Cushman's yet-to-be-released book two that in the original drafts of this episode, they were going to introduce a new character who was in love with Spock, who was going to make him soup and have the dramatic scene later. But then Dorothy Fontana was like, well, why don't we just use the lady we have who's already in love with Spock?
Yeah.
So we get a little bit of continuity here left over from Naked Time.
Now here they talk about Admiral Comac. Isn't he one of the admirals sitting next to Medea in Star Trek 09? Or am I wrong about that?
Yeah. That's the kind of subtle thing I imagine that they would have put in this.
I know it is. It's an admiral from the original series, but I can't remember which one. Yeah. I think it's Comac, though.
Spock's really good at keeping his cool here on the bridge.
Yeah.
It's not making eye contact there.
Well, it helps to have that blue light shining on his face.
That does, yeah. See, I wonder what that red ball is in Kirk's quarters.
Red matter.
Just in case I have some to hand.
It's a polo. It's a polo ball, maybe. Water polo ball for a.
No, that's Archer. You
know, as an homage to Archer.
Is that what it is? It's not. Yeah. It's not a mood light then. You know, when he brings the ladies back.
They really hadn't quite mastered Chekhov's wig yet.
Wig at that point? No. Mm.
No. They had to kill some more tribbles. There's Kirk in dad pose.
Now, does Spock have to... I mean, like Leonard Nimoy, I feel bad for him staring at, you know, we're going to shine this light in your eyes for a while. Oh, and there goes Chekhov.
Yep.
Here you go, Walter. Welcome to the show. Stare at this for a few minutes.
Because it's got to be pretty bright, especially when you consider how bright the lights are on a set, especially in this time period. And then for that to be brighter than anything else on the set, it's got to be like looking straight into a lamp.
What about Nichelle Nichols, though? I mean, Walter Koenig's doing his first episode, and so far he's got to sit in two chairs.
Yeah.
It wasn't the first episode he filmed, though.
No, because they do like doing things out of sequence.
They wanted to make sure this was... They wanted to make sure Cat's Paw was perfect. They had to work really hard on the those giant cat opticals.
See, that
what are we going to put first? Let's put this really good character piece first. We'll put Cat's Paw out later.
Yeah. We'll catch him on the hop. So, and it'll just, you know, we'll say it's a Halloween episode. See, that always got me with the TRS turbo lifts. If he lets go of that handle, does the lift stop?
I imagine so.
Yeah, probably.
They're very unclear on the, do you have to twist it? Do you have to hold it? Or maybe they have to hold it to keep themselves steady because it's moving really fast. It is a turbo lift.
True. Now this is also the new...
And why don't they call it a turbo elevator? Who calls elevators lifts? Jeez.
See, this is another thing that gets me about the sick bay, is that thing beyond Spock's head, the running machine.
Uh-huh. I love the running machine.
Yeah, but why would you have an upside down running machine?
Because
future running.
It keeps it off the floor. You can move the bed and still... I mean, think about all the people whose houses are like taken up with exercise equipment. If all their exercise equipment was hanging on the wall, you'd be able to use that floor space for other things when you were like, maybe McCoy likes to have movies, you know, a movie night in sick bay.
Yeah.
And he wants to roll that thing out of the way and not have people, you know, sorry about the giant elliptical machine behind you.
It also tickled me with the tilting beds, that the screen hand, so to speak, which is basically the extra, had to hold the bed down. Otherwise, it would have just flipped back up, and then Spock would have been launched across Medbay.
That would be even better.
So we just saw a close-up of Spock's hand, and the other thing that you could see in that hand was the braids on his uniform. And we talked about how this is the first episode where he's a commander, so two braids make sense. But he had two braids before this. Did that ever bother anyone? Because it always bothered the hell out of me.
No, because if you take TNG, the difference between a lieutenant commander and a commander is the pip is actually filled in on the commander, whereas a lieutenant commander, the pip is empty. But the pip's still there.
Right, but the equivalent of that in the original series is the solid braid and the dashed braid, and lieutenant commanders have one solid and one dashed braid. So why doesn't Spock in the first season? He's got
maybe
two
because
solid
he was
braids.
Acting as first officer. Maybe it's that's something to do I with guess, like a
tenuous.
You know, because you can be an ensign, because you can be an ensign and still be a captain, which I learned. Which I learned from Star Trek Online.
Yeah.
You could still be captain of a ship and not be a captain. I wonder if that's
something
to do with that.
Harry Kim was an ensign and a captain.
Yeah. I guess that's the most logical explanation, but I don't like it. It's not consistent with anything else in the show.
See, now this image of his betrothed, shall we say, as a child.
Mm-hmm.
The ears that they put on the child actor were actually adult Vulcan ears.
Yeah.
And they only put one on her. Which
yeah, they
is
only
why
put one on, and they just filmed her from they just photographed her from the one side.
Well, Vulcan ears are like puppy's paws. You can tell how big the Vulcan will be based on the size of their ears.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah,
I love it.
They grow into them.
So they grow into the ears.
Yeah.
As opposed to humans, where the ear never stops growing.
Okay.
Vulcans are just preset. Yeah. my
your replaced the background in remastered.
Yeah.
Because it was just like a wall, and now it's a screenshot from Enterprise, I think, with a gong in the background.
Oh, that's cool.
Spock's quarters are very reminiscent of Worf's.
Which is actually weirder, especially when you think about like Vulcans, right? Like, you don't think that Vulcans are going to be like, let's take this nice portrait of you. I mean, it's probably, if they're going to take a picture like that, it's probably going to be more like a mugshot than anything. So in the remastered version, they're like, here, stand in front of this gong. That's not a very Vulcan thing to do.
It looks more candid, I think, with the house thing.
I guess.
But
so.
you say this quarter's a lot like Worf's? What do you
the
mean?
The weapons on the
like,
wall and that.
The weapons?
Yeah. Which is very un-Vulcan-like.
But they're not readily available by the door like Worf's was.
No, but Vulcans aren't supposed to be passive.
Worf was ready, like, as soon as he answered the door, he could grab a batleth and cut you in
half. Mind you, Worf did have his posing chair as well. Because there's an episode of TNG when his door chime goes, and he's in his big, weird chair, looking in his mirror, posing, looking at himself in the mirror, stroking his beard. And I thought, yeah, that's very un-Klingon-like to be that vain. So...
I don't know. The Klingons in TOS seem slightly vain.
Yeah. In between headbutting androids and getting headaches. So
here we've got the scene where Spock is finally admitting to Kirk what his problem is.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically have the Vulcan sex talk right here in the middle of this episode on primetime television.
Yeah. Birds and bees are not Vulcan.
We just had Mark Cushman on the Ready Room talking about Amok Time and you know, the idea of this thing being recast, you know, and the possibility of that. Boy, it would not have worked. This episode in particular would not have worked with a different character, especially as an intro to that character.
Yeah. Like, look, this Vulcan's completely unstable.
And the problem with it, too, is also the relationship with this episode's so reliant on the relationship between Spock and Kirk that if you put another character in there, it doesn't work because it doesn't have the weight of that first season. to no. fall back on.
No.
Yeah. And it would seem like Spock's throwing people under the bus, you know, like, I'm bringing Kirk down here. And I mean, if it wasn't Spock, if it was, you know, Spork or somebody.
Which would be an awesome name for really anyone, Vulcan or not. Mm-hmm. Sporks.
It's also interesting that in the trivia section that the planet Altair 4 was going to be called Fontana 4.
Oh, that would have been great.
As a tribute to DC Fontana. But they changed it to Altair 4.
That's disappointing.
Do you think the capital of Fontana 4 would have been DC?
Oh, yeah. Gotta be it.
The District of Columbia.
Yeah. Would have been Fontana DC.
Oh, I love it. I'm glad that Spock knows about salmon.
Well, he knows about humpback whales.
That's true. That's true. He is able to identify.
Yeah. So he's obviously humpback whales he's and obviously where to find them. A galactic marine biologist.
Then what on earth did they need? Taylor for.
The same reason they needed an Earth historian on a starship.
So many Earth historians.
Yeah.
They went through them like paper mache.
They went through loads. So that was almost as expendable as red shirts.
Didn't help that they were wearing red.
See, whatever Spock's cooking in on that thing in the back of his room is burning.
I think you might be ahead of us, no?
He's just a couple seconds ahead, which is great because he's queuing it up so that we can see it.
No, yeah, that's totally something that he bought from Spencer's. I'm sorry.
I'm so going to Google this.
The lights even change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Spencer's, I'll explain it to our foreign audience. It's a store in every mall that sells like fog machines and those glow. Like to me, the quintessential Spencer's thing is the globe with the electricity in it, like mm-hmm. you see in the mad scientist movies. You put your finger on it and all the lightning goes to your little finger.
Basically the production design for the Borg cube, the interior of the Borg cube, everything, anything that had a light in that on that set was bought at Spencer's.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think it's we got to point out here that Spock's just mangled his computer.
Well, he's about
not yet.
To.
Yeah. That you spoiled it. Right. Poor people had never seen that episode.
Now he's mangling his computer, which is
see,
a great
I'm ahead of
shot.
You too, which is yeah. which is also interesting.
See, it doesn't matter, guys. It
doesn't matter. I'm queuing it up.
Yeah,
yeah. But Spock,
these skulls in sickbay are terrifying.
Yeah, yeah. That's not really what you want to see when you're going to sickbay. Is row upon row of heads.
I guess it's just McCoy's office. Maybe he's got like a Hamlet thing going on. I don't know.
And if a patient came in and was like, what are these? You know, if I was McCoy, I'd be like, oh, these are the ones who didn't make it.
See, another bit of trivia.
I've got a space right here.
Yeah.
I've got more.
I wonder if any of them. Oh, hang on. That's Neanderthal. I wonder if one of them is Vulcan.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, no, because then it would imply that McCoy knew anything about Vulcan biology, which he obviously doesn't, or he would know about Ponfar.
No, he just means he knows about the skull.
Which upsets me. I've not gotten to the episodes, or did I, where, like, T'Pol flat out tells everybody about Ponfar over and over and over again?
Over and over and over again. Yeah, the secret that they're not supposed to tell anyone, but they do anyway. Yeah.
And then I guess nobody wrote it down, just like how they ran into the Borg and Ferengi, and nobody really noticed.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, another thing, the bit where he asks, Kirk requests, you know, a bit of trivia again, to be diverted, and he asks later on what he asks to pull some strings. Mm-hmm. In the original draft of the script as well, that was Kirk knew the people on Altair 4. Altair 6, sorry.
Oh.
So he just says we're going to be like.
I know these guys. They'll let us be late.
Yep. It's not a problem.
Oh, poor Chapel.
No, she's loving this, man. She gets to go into Spock's bed. Rude. His bed chamber, anyway. Mm. I mean, she practically sprinted down that corridor.
Mm-hmm.
I would still be scared. Flip out, throw soup.
Well, I wonder if she came in, if she clocked onto the computer screen.
It's weird how Chapel is sort of not considered one of the main eight. Mm. Like, how much screen time does she have compared to, say, Chekhov?
She has surprising little screen time.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. There's just, it's unfortunate. If anything, Majel Barrett is constantly underused.
Yeah.
He calls her Christine. That's
It's a touchy moment there with the tear as well.
Yeah. Asking for a bowl of soup. She's so happy. It's so cute.
Yeah. Well, I would love to make you soup. Just try to hit the ball this time.
I'll make it less purple this time so that it doesn't stain the wall again.
So here we are at Vulcan, in standard orbit of Vulcan.
I like that the turbolift does go sideways sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's a very neat little thing that you might not notice that it needs to go more than one direction.
Only Kirk's holding on though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's not...
You gotta
hold it
and you gotta turn the thing because you remember there's that the episode of DS9.
Yes.
When they can't figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, when the lift doesn't move because they haven't twisted it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I still don't know why he has to hold on to it. Okay, and he untwists it when he's done.
Yeah.
Right.
So...
Maybe it's just that size, putting your hand down just to put it back up again 10 seconds later.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It keeps you from having a separate emergency stop button, too. So you can stop and have a dramatic conversation without saying, computer, hold lift, which they do in TNG.
In TNG, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All the time.
Although there is a cue about the operation of the turbo when in Kirk's eyes to Uhura in an episode, clear that tube. Mm-hmm. So Uhura can actually control the turbo lift from her console. Which is why it's always waiting for him. Every time Kirk walks towards the turbo lift door, Uhura cues it up just in case.
So there's T'Pring.
I like the red light on Spock here in his close-ups from the light from the view screen.
Yeah.
That's a little detail that they normally don't try.
And it's half red, half, regular colored.
Ooh.
Just like Pulp Fiction, obviously.
Oh, these guys. I thought you were going to reference that he's half Vulcan.
Well, I'm sure that's what they were going for. But obviously they stole it from Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
Yeah.
Them time traveling people stealing from Quentin Tarantino.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And here's where we get into one of the few remastered changes that I don't necessarily agree with.
What's that?
When they replace the replace live action shots with this huge CG expanse of Kirk and Spock and them walking across this giant stone bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like, it's neat having the far off shot in the distance of his hometown from yesteryear, but
yeah,
it also ties in nicely to the Search for Spock.
Mm-hmm.
When we get a similar shot,
but I don't like replacing the live action footage with
a painting.
With CG painting stuff. But this is a cool little arena that they have here.
Yep.
I mean, it looks like it was designed for fighting, but I guess this is what they do for everything.
It's multifunction.
Yeah. It's like, how they have stadiums where you can play both basketball and hockey. They just take out the floor.
Like the hockey game I went to the other day, it was at the Pacers basketball arena.
There you go.
except not nearly as full because nobody cares about hockey.
Well, you were going to like about United like States League hockey. Hockey, yeah.
And Kirk and McCoy don't have all the details going down here. Wait, we're getting married? I thought you were already married. No, you're by my spin at my wedding. We're like betrothed, but not really.
It's just been an engagement.
Very, very long one.
But he did say wife before, so you can understand why they're confused. He's just not very good.
Spock, it's like you said wife earlier just for a dramatic stop so that we could cut to a commercial.
He's like, dude, I'm going through Ponfar right now, okay? If I misspeak, you know, give me a break.
Yeah.
Get off my back.
Don't mess with me. Just take a look at my computer.
Yeah.
The long, dramatic reveal of Vulcan wedding party.
Mm-hmm. With the reused Romulan helmets.
Kind of like a human wedding party, honestly.
Yeah, except you don't get two men struggling to carry someone on a human.
You also don't choose one of your groomsmen to fight you to the death.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on the wedding.
I know, Mike, you had a really awesome wedding.
Well, all I can say, Mike, awesome. Is if someone turns up to your wedding with a blade the size of, like, you know, what that guy's carrying, then you had a very unusual wedding. I mean, why is there an executioner at a wedding? That's what I want to know.
You never know. You never know.
Tradition, apparently, exact reason.
I can totally see that, because there are, you know, I mean, weddings have weird traditions. You know, you always see things which are symbolic of other things. And, for that to be symbolic of something, I can totally understand it, you know?
Of course, there's the well-known thing with T'Pau that she was going to be, that's what, she was going to be Enterprise.
Yeah.
And also the fact that the actress couldn't do the Vulcan salute.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to get her fingers ready off camera and hold it before she raised
her
hand.
Her paw is strong.
Yeah.
She's like reaching his ear.
Why?
Okay, Kai.
Why did they not use T'Pau in Enterprise?
Because...
Well, she'd have to have a ridiculous accent.
For starters, yeah. There's also they'd have to pay repeat fees every time the name is used.
Oh, that's what it is, I'm sure. Yeah, that's the same reason why it wasn't... why it was Tom Paris and not whatever...
Locarno.
Tom Locarno.
Yeah. Cheap.
Just so you don't have to pay repeat fees.
And you wouldn't have to pay And you wouldn't have to, like, have this level of continuity that it seems Enterprise already had a problem with. It'd be really hard to be like, oh, okay, and she grows up to be... She's obviously not going to die, so we can't really put her in danger. And,
well, you know,
she's
going to
grow up
but...
and be the only lady to turn down a seat on the Federation Council. It's like, well, so she can't help make Federation, so...
No, but I mean, if you're going to end the show with that, it's like... They're like, you were the first officer on the Enterprise. It was amazing. You want to be on the Federation Council? Nah.
Yeah, not really. Earlier, Kirk mentioned something about Spock's family being very important because T'Pau was here. I wonder if they knew at this point that Journey to Babel was going to reveal that his dad was the ambassador.
It's curious. I don't know. It's interesting.
The other thing with T'Pau and all that wouldn't have worked is she makes references to thou art human.
Mm-hmm.
So that again wouldn't have worked because obviously if she was T'Pau the Enterprise, she would have had prolonged contact with humans.
Bow chicken wow wow.
Oh, yes.
Prolonged contact.
Did I ever tell you about my days as a drug addict?
And it wouldn't, I mean, yeah, she wouldn't, if she was all super traditional and stuff, then, oh, never mind.
Yeah.
I was getting to Pring and T'Pau confused.
Pring and T'Pau.
With T'Pau. Oh, gosh.
Vulcans and their names.
That's like Klingons, they all begin with K.
except for Worf and Alexander.
Yeah, but that was raised by humans.
Worf wasn't named by a human.
Worf was raised by humans.
He was raised by humans, but he wasn't named by them.
He was the son of Moog.
Yeah, but
Moog also doesn't start with a K.
There's no indication that his dad gave him his name, though.
Drass, Martog. I mean, really, we're just talking TOS Klingons are all named with K.
It was a cultural thing. It's like, you know, back in the day, everyone was named Mike, Michael. It doesn't really happen too much anymore.
Now everyone's named Peyton or Bentley.
Wow. Bentley.
I have a friend who named her. I didn't realize it. She's like, you know, they have a 2-year-old named Bentley, and it was only when I saw like the cover of a you know, one of those gossip magazines. It was like so and so from Teen Moms and her son Bentley, and I'm like, oh. I yelled at her the next time I saw her. It's like, you named your son after Teen Moms. What is wrong with you? I'm sorry.
I was thinking of the car.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Like, if you name your kid Bentley, does he have to wear, like, a tux all the time?
Yeah.
Bentley's fine. I like the name Bentley.
Mercedes-Benz. Aston. Aston Martin.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
That's a good name, yeah.
Yeah.
See, this is where we get the conniving of the female Vulcan name.
Yeah, this is impressive here, her logic. I wonder how many years she's been planning this. Like, waiting for Spock. I wonder how long, you know, like, because Spock didn't even know if it was going to happen.
Yeah.
If blood fever was going to hit him. So I'm wondering if she was just hoping against hope that it wouldn't happen and had this plan in her back pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Though she also had to have planned that eventually Spock's going to grow up and he's going to be first officer in a starship and he's going to bring down his best friends to, you know, the wedding ceremony.
Yeah, and I'll get to kill a human.
Yeah, this executioner guy's, I don't understand his mask.
It's so when he lops off someone's head, he doesn't get blood splattered up his nose.
Oh, okay. I guess that makes sense. And for being, you know, such a logical pacifist race, there is a lot of sharp weapons and stuff, like you were saying.
Well, they do say that Vulcans, even by human standards, were violent. So, you know, that's basically saying that they made us look like a tea party.
Yeah, I mean, it's all tradition and whatnot, you know. So the guy who, the other man... What is his name?
Stern, and it's Stern, and it's Storn.
Storn. Yeah. So that is the guy who was going to be the replacement Vulcan.
Yes, this was his consolation prize.
Yeah.
Is to be the other man.
Yeah, and there's a very interesting exchange between him and Spock at the end of the episode, which, if you listen to. In that context, is very interesting. It has a whole new meaning now, where Spock says something along the lines of, "It's sometimes it's better to want a thing than have a thing." Something along those lines.
Mm. Having is not so good as wanting.
Yeah.
Or something.
And the actor's just looking at him like, "You
bastard."
I'll be the judge of that.
Here, Spock gets a lovely purple sash.
Mm-hmm.
It's very fetching. Which also tells you that...
We should have somebody knit those, like, replica Vulcan sashes.
Do you know anyone who could do that, Drew?
Maybe. Shut up.
But it also indicates how pre-planned it was, because the rival had the green sash already on.
Oh.
So this is all pre-planned.
Now I'm going to have one of these things, I have to study this, have one of these things knit, next five-year mission concert I go to, I'll wear it during a muck time.
Yeah.
You got to knit this thing and then just take it to a Novos and be like, here.
You go, this, we will be the official supplier. Add this to your supplier. Novo Geek collection. Yeah. It's just a scarf.
Right.
But if you put it around your waist, it's from a muck time.
Mm-hmm.
These Dutch angles are, and the close-ups of the bells and stuff are very 60s, I feel.
Yeah, and they got the handheld. They're moving around with the whole thing. I mean, it's very progressive. And like this show is, the photography in this show is very progressive, very indie in a lot of ways. And it's kind of unfortunate that when they went to the Next Generation era, they sort of were like, no, let's play it really, really safe. Let's be really, really traditional. So that, like, so much so that, you know, apparently on the first Mirror episode of Deep Space Nine, there was like a Dutch angle, and like the executives like freaked out, like, what are you guys doing?
That is disappointing.
I kind of wish that, you know, the Next Gen era stuff had been as progressive and as daring as the original series stuff was back in the day.
Yeah, maybe that was something to do with syndication. Like, we need to be, you know, we don't want to surprise all the poor people, because heaven knows what channel it's going to be on.
I think it's kind of an extension of, you know, the Kirk Picard thing, you know? The original series is the adventures of Roddenberry as a young man, and, you know, I mean, Next Generation, he's older, and he's like, what are you doing with your new handheld cameras, you young whippersnappers?
Picard wouldn't stand for it.
See, I do like the way the Lerpers are wrapped in a fetching shade of purple as well. Mm-hmm.
I do appreciate they tried to make them look metal.
Yes.
And yeah. Dangerous.
It works well enough.
Yeah.
Better than the Batleths and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are pretty wooden.
Yeah, and William Shatner, when it gets handed to him, William Shatner does a good job of like, oh, that's heavy.
Yeah. Oh, that's a lot heavier than I expected.
Yeah. Although the bit when he finds out it's a fight to the death, he's the actual gulp that he does is brilliant.
It's Shatner.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed, but he's the best.
He is.
We did an episode on Trek News and Views about the captains, and Chris came up with a lovely thing that Kirk would be the captain you'd have the most fun with, but Picard mm-hmm. would be the one that would get you home.
Well, I mean, if you're going to die, you might as well have a good time before you do it.
Yeah.
So here's where that music is. That's a great shot there, where the way that they sell that by having the slice to the shirt being slightly out of frame, and then they pan down, just timed it perfectly.
You can actually get Kurt dolls with that on it.
I don't think they're called dolls.
No, they're action figures.
Action figures.
Show some respect.
Gosh, Mom.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Kirk lasts this long against. I mean, because we got the thin air, and the. Did they mention heavier gravity?
Well, that plays into what McCoy was later.
Yeah.
Well, the Vulcans, but
like,
are
the
stronger.
Fact that Kirk can do that and like flip Spock over.
It's Kirk.
Yeah,
it just shows how incredible Kirk is.
Yeah, he's a better fighter than Spock is, even though Spock is stronger and stuff.
Spock's got the strength, but Kirk's got the moves.
Mm-hmm.
And T'Pol, for some reason, like, calls a timeout. That's really good.
Yeah, the hot dog man's like,
the end of round one. Yeah. Round two, fight.
It was a TV timeout. You know, every once in a while, the officials need to stop it in order to go to a commercial.
Even here's McCoy presenting the commercial. Yes. Dioxin.
Dioxin, yeah.
It keeps you breathing.
That shot right there is the shot which is used in the little picture for those shirts. Have you ever seen those shirts where they have the logo is like House MD, but it says like Bones MD. And then they have like a cartoon version of that.
Yeah,
shot
him
right
holding
there.
Holding the hypospray. Mm-hmm. Triox. I'm sorry.
But this plays into what you were saying earlier, Drew, about because he's panting here because he's struggling for oxygen.
And look at Spock. Perfect, like he completely obeys T'Pau's command. And she apparently yelled, freeze! And he just like it playing freeze tag as a kid.
So now we've got Bolas.
Kirk doesn't even understand this weapon. The look he gives is just like, well, I don't even know. It's some kind of, do I wrap it? Is this another? Oh, okay. Spock shows him by kicking him, bringing him down.
See, Kirk
there's
probably thought it was going to be a skipping
not
contest.
Stunt double stuff here, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Kirk just never gets the hang of his weapon.
He doesn't even bother.
Eventually, he's just like, "I'm just going to punch him in the face. Yeah. Forget it.
I'm not playing with his skipping rope. I'm just going to hit him." Oh, yeah. There's the classic '60s thing about putting someone over a hot pit, as if he's not sweating enough already.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, now the question is, well, okay, there's a lot. I have a lot of questions.
Go for it.
McCoy had trioxin. No, he didn't have trioxin with him. He had, or he was able to mix together something that makes you look dead on the fly.
Yeah.
Kirk, obviously, we saw him from every moment from when he finds out it's a fight to the death to now. Does he know that he's not dead?
I don't think he does.
No, I don't think he does.
He's just like, man, I just got my butt handed to me. I guess I'm dead.
But yeah, he couldn't tell out. Kirk, because Kirk would have had to make it convincing.
Yeah. Right.
Of course, he still could have killed him. I mean, he could have wrapped that thing around his neck and snapped his neck, and then that would have been the end of
it's
Kirk.
A risky game. McCoy was playing a risky game.
But it's also a bit concerning that McCoy carries them top of drugs around with him anyway.
He's like Batman, you know? Yeah. He's got his utility belt. You never know what you might
need. Hand me
use.
The shark spray, Robin.
Exactly.
I was going to use this on the ladies later, but I'll use it on you now.
Nope. But I think Spock should suspect something here, the fact that McCoy's not trying to kill him or something.
Well, what's McCoy going to do? Even if he tried killing him now, I mean, all the Vulcans would be like, hey, you know, we don't condone that. That's murder, right?
Right.
I would take out ritual combat allowed.
Yeah.
Right. And Spock, you know, he's going willfully.
Well, all McCoy has to do is say, I love T'Pring. You know, I'm going to fight Spock for it.
But it's also interesting that they make constant references throughout 2S to the Vulcans being a pacifistic society.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the way that they solve their problems is by having ritualistic combat to the death.
Yeah.
But this is that
dark
one
past.
It's that one weird thing, you know, and it's where all that stuff is released. So
you're a pacifistic society, every 7 years you either get laid or kill someone.
Mm.
Okay. No wonder
that's the basis of Return of the Archons and the Purge and all that stuff, you know.
I like earlier when Spock turns away from McCoy, McCoy heads back up to the ship. They just do the off-camera transporter. You know, save a couple hundred dollars and just have him transport off-screen. And really, they shouldn't be the focus.
Yeah.
But I think in the 60s, I would be afraid of like, all right, Star Trek's finally back on the air. And, you know, back then you never heard you know, so-and-so's contract and all that kind of... I mean, if you didn't read Variety. So I'm, you know, at this point, I would be worried. Okay, Spock's the main character now. All right.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be too worried about it, especially... I mean, like, are you... Do you, like, think that they would continue a show where it's like, oh, yeah, I killed the captain in a, you know, weird sort of ritualistic thing, and now I'm just the captain. Sorry. Sorry.
I guess.
I'm the good guy from now on, and next week we're going to pretend like this, you know, nothing weird happened or anything.
I'll tell you what, that executioner, I bet he was glad when they said cut.
Yeah.
Take that face mask off.
Yeah.
All you can smell is your own breath.
Yeah. I just did some digging while you two were talking. Vulcan, the planet, so to speak, is also reused in Journey to Babel. It's Tycho Ford and Obsession. The McColton homeworld in Specs of the Gun. And the Lights of Zetar.
Yeah.
So that planet gets around.
And all they had to do to for the planet surface is shine a red light on the background.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then here remastered goes into another long shot of Spock transporting away.
Hmm. Interesting. So that's it for Vulcan. Now we're back on the ship for the remainder of the episode. And here's that reveal. Which is really good. It's very cute.
This, do you know this was edited different for the German audience?
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. The Vulcan's mating topic was too adult for German TV. So they changed the dialogue and cut some scenes. As a result, Vulcan's... He doesn't go for the pump fire. He's got a lethal disease.
Hmm. Hmm.
Huh. I guess with dubbing, there's a lot you can do.
Yeah. And yeah. It was actually called Space Fever in Germany.
Mm. Okay.
I got space fever. I guess it was if it was in the 70s.
Yeah. And the bit where McCoy injects him is when he's actually experimenting. He injects an experimental drug into him.
I wonder how they explained why they were fighting.
Gold knows. Maybe that, not the color of his sash.
The shot where you know Spock first sees Kirk, and he's like Jim, and he looks so happy. That's a great moment. It's a great character moment for Spock. And now we find out that they're not going to get in trouble after all.
No. And we have an emotional outburst.
Yeah.
I still think that collection of skulls is weird.
It's a little weird. I guess everyone has their thing. Maybe it's just there for Halloween. You know, he's getting ready for Cat's Paw. And he's here are my Halloween decorations.
McCoy's the guy who celebrates Halloween all month.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I'm going to do that thing that people do and watch one horror movie a day for the entire month of October.
I wonder what he thinks of when he gets to Halloween, like the movie Halloween.
I'm sure he thinks it's really weird that the killer is wearing a Captain Kirk mask. It's like, where did he get that? That's so crazy. And now we're at the end credits.
Mm-hmm. And we get instead of just having the normal random shots from random episodes, the guest stars got their own face credits, which is really cool.
Yeah, they were like, this is what we're going to do in season two. This is our new thing. And then by the second episode, they're like, it's way too much work, guys. So
yeah, I don't want to have to go through the film and cut something out and do this, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, especially
we'll show a picture of a rock for the last five credits.
If we had digital editing, that would be amazing. Unfortunately,
no one's invented it yet.
Yeah, so we
unfortunately,
need to
I have no idea
like
what you're talking about.
A steam back, so
digital thing you speak of.
Sorry, dudes. All right, so that's the end of the episode. Any final thoughts, Colin?
Yeah, it's interesting that the scene in the lift where Kirk and Spock and Spock's like losing it, they was going to use that in Trials and Tribulations for when Sisko meets Kirk instead of the bit that they actually used, where he's, can you sign this please, sir?
Mm-hmm.
They was going to do that. The reason they went against it is because they didn't want Sisko to look silly.
Yeah.
Which he would have done if they'd used the turbo lift scene. But yeah.
And Kirk would have been wearing the wrong shirt.
But that's as well, yeah. I think the one that the actual scene that they did use in Trials and Tribulations worked a lot better.
Yeah.
But yeah. Except that Kirk's kind of giving him flirty eyes.
Well, yeah, because Kirk, you know, in reality, is looking at a woman.
Is that really weird, though? I mean, I'd give flirty eyes to Sisko.
It's bald men. He's got a thing for bald men, too.
Yeah.
I should have won my baseball cap then.
Yeah, he gave him flirty. He gave Picard flirty eyes in Generations. He's like, oh my.
Yeah, but
do you think he was talking about dying? Oh, he's like, oh my. That's an amazing haircut you've got there, Picard.
I wish I could pull that off.
Yeah. So Picard's like, well, you actually could literally pull that
off. Pull it off, yeah. Watch how you fall off that bridge later. And. But yeah, it's I like this episode. It's very well written. We get to learn a lot about Vulcan mysticism and Vulcan culture. The music, obviously, is paramount because the music features in, like we said earlier, Games to Stratalian and loads of other things. And if you want to know about the music, folks, go listen to Melodic Treks, Episode 6, which went out on the 15th. Shameless plug.
Yep.
But I think it's great, and I wish, I mean, they've probably done it in fan fiction, you know, or in the books or something, but I would love to know what happened to Spock's ex-wife afterwards. And if they lived happily ever after, or if you thought, oh, crap, what have I done?
Yeah.
I'm sure she didn't live happily ever after.
No.
Mike, what did you think about the episode?
I think it's really good. I've seen this episode or seen bits and pieces of it millions and millions of times because for like a good year, this was my wife's go-to episode for when she was going to fall asleep. She'd be like, okay, I'm going to bed. And then she'd turn on a Muck Time and it would just be playing. So every time I'd come into the bedroom, there'd be a Muck Time playing on TV for like a good year. Yeah. So I'm very familiar with it a lot more than most episodes of the original series. And I do think it is one of the best episodes of the show.
I agree. I mean, it was on your marathon list.
Yes,
right?
It was.
It was on mine too. One of the episodes that you should start with if you're going through TOS. Yeah. I love a Muck Time. I think that it's really good that they set aside an episode to give us more about Vulcans, because we've got all these neat alien races and most of the time it's just the aliens of the week that we get to learn about, but it's nice to learn about the one that we spend every week with.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the culture and customs that they have, the surprising custom and cultures that they have.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Colin, where can people find you when you're not commentating with us?
You can find me on Melodic Treks, which is also on Trek FM. And you can find me on Twitter at CLLMH01.
Yeah, and if you listen to this commentary and it doesn't make any sense to you, the reason is probably because you didn't listen to Melodic Treks on Saturday. So I know it's kind of out of order or whatever, but go back and listen to Melodic Treks. And then listen to this one again, and then you'll be like, oh, I get it now.
Well, Colin, thanks for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Well, that was good having Colin on. I like having a third person on sometimes to give us another point of trivia or point of view when we're doing our commentaries.
Yeah, and the best part is when someone else is on, then that's 33% less talking that the two of us have to do.
It's true. if it was evenly distributed. 33.33333.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was fun talking to Colin about Amok Time, but that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
The Enterprise.
Because if you break it down, you've got a flying saucer with rockets. It's everything that he was trying to avoid, but it's so much more than that.
He found a way to make a flying saucer with rockets make sense.
Earl Grey.
Encounter at Farpoint.
The alien ship is literally shooting at and killing colonists on the planet, and he's like...
I haven't had my talk-to-talk with Beverly yet.
The Ready Room.
Star Trek continues.
Even on just seeing a corridor wall, you'll see, like, there's just a slash of red against the wall. That's a stylistic choice that they were making in that era. So Matt has a great eye while we're shooting a scene.
The Orb.
The full NDS9.
It's a milestone in the Cliff Bowl directing of Star Trek and Deep Space Nine. Defiant marks the final non-appearance of Sirach Gwafdon in a Cliff Bowl directed episode.
To the journey!
Innocence Rewrite.
We'll use a deflector dish to emit a tachyon beam, fire a few photon torpedoes, blow up the anomaly of the week, and then we'll just fly off into space like we do at the end of every week.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Remembering Cliff Bull with Larry Nemechek.
But the thing about Cliff personally was that I'll always remember, and it comes through in this transcript, he's a pretty plain-spoken guy. And he would call a spade, and what's your rating on this podcast? Are you pretty much up to...
Warp 5.
Prequel design.
Or just, you know, for the sake of the actor, so they felt like, in the design people, they felt like this was a real place that... people would believe, and I just really appreciate that.
Literary Treks.
John Jackson Miller, Absent Enemies.
And of course, the larger thing about the whole phasing thing is it allowed me to tell a story that I think had a Star Trek feel to it. With regard to the issue of war and peace.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and get in on the Daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Windows Podcast Directory, and Xbox and Zune. Or you can stream just directly from the website. Visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. So let's tell everybody where they can contact us so they can leave some feedback. Maybe we'll read it on the air. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. You can choose to send a show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also use the tab on the right-hand side of any page and send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone, or you can talk to us and other listeners on our forum at trek.fm/forums. In social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Mike, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at mumbles3k, or you can find me on... commentarytrackstars.com, where I do commentary Trackstars off topic with my co-hosts Max and Brandon. And you can also find me on trek.fm doing commentary Trackstars with Max, or email me at comtrackstars@gmail.com.
You can find me on Twitter at 005 doublofive, where I may or may not talk about Amok Time. Probably not, but who knows.
Why wouldn't you?
I should always talk about Amok Time.
Yep. Any time's a good time to talk about Amok Time.
That's pretty good. That's a good one.
Thanks.
That's a good one.
All right.
Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor who helps us bring Standard Orbit to you each week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible's a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible's the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, Audible has something for everyone. Mike, what do you have for everybody?
Well, I was thinking that we could take a look at something that Theodore Sturgeon did today because he's the guy who wrote Amok Time and everyone loves Amok Time. We certainly do, and we certainly love his writing on that. So I thought maybe it'd be cool to take a look at one of the books that he has written, of which there are many. So there's one here, which I've never read. I've never read a Theodore Sturgeon book, I'm sorry. But there's one here called More Than Human. And it's narrated by Stefan Rudnicki and Harlan Ellison, another Star Trek writer. You can get the unabridged version on Audible. Here's the description. In this genre-bending novel, among the first to have launched sci-fi into literature, a group of remarkable social outcasts band together for survival and discover that their combined powers render them superhuman. Together, they may represent the next step in evolution, or the final chapter in the history of the human race. As they struggle to find whether they are meant to help humanity or destroy it, Sturgeon explores questions of power and morality, individuality, and belonging.
Wow.
Sounds pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, I'd listen to that.
Yeah.
And as a Trek FM listener, I could listen to it for free.
Yep.
Because you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. And lastly, there's one more way you can help us keep Standard Orbit coming to you each week, and that's by adopting some alien illustrations. If you go to trek.fm/donate, you'll find 8 original alien illustrations by Tobu Ushi, who does most of the artwork you see on the website. They're available as badges and art prints, and there are different contribution levels for you to choose from. Just let us know what you would like in which format. Again, you'll find them at trek.fm/donate, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show to you each week. Well, that was fun. I like commentaries. We may go to them too often, but they're so much fun.
Yeah, we'll lay off on the commentaries for at least a few weeks until we get John Tenuto back in here, but to do, you know, Wrath of Khan. So
commentary part 2.
Yes.
The Wrath of Commentary.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And there's the title. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landru.
Mr. Chekov, take us out of orbit. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Aye, sir.